This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today our in-studio guest is Craig Hill. I've known Craig Hill for, over 20 years now.
Yeah, close to 25, I think we're getting.
That's right. That's a long time. Craig's been running our loan business and getting people investing in trustees and dealing with the borrowers since we opened. So, Craig, glad to have you back.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You know, I spoke last night and I mentioned to the audience that there was a time that that hard money lending wasn't done to investors.
Yeah.
And you were in that business at that time. And who did you loan to?
Yeah, basically hard money before we met, if you will. I mean, it was lending small seconds primarily to people that were living in their house that had a first, maybe they were in foreclosure or they had some kind of need. And primarily you were lending somebody $20,000 or $30,000 to put a Band-Aid on a problem that was probably going to resurface
exactly
in a year or 2 years.
So it was really a much more risky loan at that point because you're a second and you're in a situation where you're solving something and creating maybe the next problem only a little bit bigger.
Oh, yeah. It was completely more risky, and it was one of those things where it was almost like you just wanted to be careful. You never wanted to make the last hard money loan.
Right.
You know, in that time frame, because somebody would make a hard money loan, then somebody would make another hard money loan, and you always were cautious because you didn't want to make that last hard money loan.
So you'd end up with the property.
Yeah, because then ultimately you're going to end up with probably the property and a problem or both.
Right. I remember I actually had somebody working for me at the time that I had him go out one day and visit lenders, and you and I met because of him knocking on your door. And I told you what I did, and it was almost like, okay, we'll see if. And so you talked to the owner of the company,
right?
And you kind of devised a loan to value that would work, and so we started doing stuff,
right?
So that was literally the first time that company did lending to investors.
Yeah, the one rule of thumb with hard money used to be a house is worth what somebody paid for it.
Okay.
I mean, that was like a written rule. So the house next door sold for 100. Somebody buys the house identical next door to it for 50,000. Now that house is worth 50,000.
Right.
So that really was the mentality until we met. And then obviously, you know, the story is, as some people know already, but you know, you came to us and had bought, I don't know. I think at the first time it was two houses
That's
in Moreno
right.
Valley.
Right.
And, you know, probably they were worth 100 or so, and you'd bought them for in the 30s, high 30s, low 40s, I think.
Yeah.
And it was really difficult convincing everybody that this made sense.
I remember because in our original discussion, we didn't talk about how much I paid for it.
Right.
I just said, okay, let's give it a roll on these two houses. And one of them was worth about 85, and I had paid 34 for it. And so the appraisal came in, and you gave me the loan amount of 65%. So it was 50-something. And I asked you, I said, is it going to bother you that you're loaning me more than I paid? And that was when you were like, whoa.
Right. Right.
And so that was because you had to go to the owner and explain why it still made sense. And
exactly.
I think everybody was holding their collective breath at that point.
Yeah. I mean, it was something that you felt like had to work. And obviously with, you know, you as the borrower, it did work tremendously, so much so that like immediately I almost stopped doing every other type of hard money loan and only focused on looking for people that were investors because it was just such a better business model.
Yeah, you could have multiple loans from people that actually had a business, not a problem.
Exactly. So you're dealing with somebody solving a problem, not somebody that's in a problem. And I think the funniest thing for me I was still at the company was for how long some of the old guard, if you will, held on to the notion that this will not work.
Yeah.
For long term.
Interesting.
And, you know, what was that? 3 years there and 20 years here. It's still working.
Still working.
Yeah, and fantastically.
And now it's pretty much against the rules to loan to the person that has a problem.
Yeah.
That owns the house.
Yeah, exactly. It's gone full circle, because if you get so many calls now at the office where somebody calls and the first question really you kind of ask when you get an inkling is, you know, do you live in the house? And if they do, it's almost a it is a no answer for us.
Right.
Some companies will still do owner-occupied, but I would say 70 to 80% minimum won't even look at hard money, if not more.
Yeah, it's one of those things that you think, okay, that could be a problem someday, which is really what you don't want your business
right.
model to have a
right.
bunch of, that's for
well,
sure.
Well, we always talk about it. There's a certain amount of things you don't want to do, because if you do 10 of them, you're going to have three problems.
Yeah.
And the seven successful ones will never make up for three problems.
Yeah, you spend 80% of your time solving right. all that nonsense.
Exactly.
It's better not to have that list if you can avoid it.
Exactly.
I remember when we first funded those loans, I could sense, okay, everybody was kind of tenuous. So I wrote 6 months of payments on each of the loans. And I think it was then that it dawned on the owner is like, okay, this is a different borrower,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, exactly. Very, very few clients had written six checks in a row. Just a quick, funny story. There was one that wrote those checks, but he was, and I won't get into too many details, but he was shortly indicted on fraud. So, that was a different client.
So I hope I didn't remind you of anybody at that time.
No, matter of fact, the timing was perfect, because that was just an interesting case. But yeah, just a very unique situation.
For me, you know, what that allowed me to do was expand my business. And I knew that's what I was going to try to do, is get access to some money. But we were attending those HUD auctions. So I'd go to these HUD auctions and you guys gave me a line of credit. So I'd go there with a piece of paper that said right. I had $1 million available. And when I bought something for 60 grand, they literally would cross it out and make it 940.
it is comical sometimes how they look at things.
Yeah. But that expanded my business, you know, and that was one of the things that I had to learn. And we've both seen this, is that you can be a really good buyer, but there's a payment attached to these things.
Right.
So when you have a business that ends up with 20 of these simultaneously at all times, you know, you really have a monthly cost that's ongoing.
Right. That never goes away.
That never goes away until you're done.
Yeah. The inventory just changes out.
That's right.
But, and that's what I try to talk to a lot of people about is, you know, sometimes doing just a few less deals, if they're the best seven deals out of 10, might be a better business model. Because if those three or the one or the two, if those never go away, then pretty soon, if it gets to the end of the line, you're 20, you end up with the one or the two now being 15 or 16.
Yeah.
And you just don't ever want to end up in that situation.
No, it's, you know, when you're a good buyer, you think, okay, well, I got to get everything I can. And then you realize, maybe not. Maybe I'll be more selective. I'll say no to the last two or three. And I'll have some liquidity, because you never know. I mean, that's the one thing that drove me nuts when I just had the property business, is that you'd have, I remember one month we had seven closings that were going to happen, and one of them happened.
Right.
And I remember I had enough money from the closing to pay the hard money loan payments on
Right. Yeah, no, it's, you definitely have to manage that. It can become... It's a little easier way to leverage, but like you say, you have to realize there's a cost associated with that too, and you got to be always aware of the overall situation.
You know, for me, at the time, the discounts were pretty sizable, so that was a big help. So when I was borrowing, I know it was 12 and a half, and I think it was 5.
Yeah, that was when it started, yeah.
Okay, it was 5 and 12 and a half.
12 and a half and 5.
And I was just grateful to have access to it, you know?
Right.
And that was the big deal, is like, oh my gosh, because I was just thinking, okay, I can go to HUD auction and just everything that makes sense to me, I can say yes to.
Right.
And that was, you know, obviously before I had a bank account, and when it was done, I was done. Or if a credit line, you know, and all of a sudden you just say, okay, there's nothing I can do to expand this. And so that was a big deal. And it was also a big deal to me to know that part of my business was solved.
Right.
That was a big deal because I didn't have to worry about, okay, I got to find someone else with dough.
Yeah, no, we've obviously talked a lot because my mind was just heading for the scenario. You kind of have two trains of thought on the money.
Right.
One is where the money side is now solved with a cost, which is the route you chose.
Right.
Or some people will try to choose to solve the money issue themselves with what they figure is little or no cost.
Right.
But time is always a cost. So if you're spending a third of your time working on the money, that's a third of your time that you take away from the property buying side of it.
Sure.
And not that maybe one is better than the other, but I mean, that's two distinct train of thoughts. When you get a relationship with the lender, a hard money lender, like you said, you really don't have to think about that side of it.
Yeah. And that to me was a big relief. I had no intention of saying, okay, well, gosh, if I could go the direct, I'd get to save this stuff. That wasn't even a thought. I was just thinking, thank God I can buy five houses at this auction and not think about where the dough's coming from.
Right, exactly.
And that really helped. Hard money, the term hard money, what differentiates that type of lender? So I'm an investor and I go to the bank, I get a no answer, and I go to a hard money lender and I get a yes answer. What's the difference in what we look for?
Yeah, the difference is probably easiestly put is credit driven in some ways or qualifying driven in some ways. Where a bank is going to, everybody out there has been through a bank probably processed at least once or at least tried, where with the bank, they're going to look at every detail of your income, every detail of your expenses, what kind of funds you have available, which I'll get into in a second. And then they're going to make a decision based on that. So, which for me, the most comical part about that is, let's say you want to buy a house and it the purchase price is $500,000 and you come to them and say you want to put $250,000 down. Well, they'll say, we can't do that because your debt ratio is 41 instead of 38.
Right.
Now, I may be dating myself because okay, those were the numbers like 25 years ago.
Right.
But in other words, so they're looking at it in a totally different prism, I think. With hard money, it's not institutional money. Private money is often interchangeable with hard money. So really, you're getting the funds from private parties, either in a pool situation or directly. We get ours directly. And we're looking at it I like to think, more of a common sense perspective. So we're primarily going to look at the property, the equity position, and then secondly, we're going to look at the cash available to the borrower. Because over the 20-some years we've been doing this, the cash available is really the most probably prominent factor in a successful outcome. So where a bank may look at somebody with an 800 credit score and just enough money to get by as a really good client, we would prefer somebody in that first example that like had a 590 credit score and was able to put $250,000 down on a $500,000 property. And just to clarify, we won't like take all credit. We're going to look for the major issues, bankruptcies, foreclosures, things of that nature, anything current, anything that's going to affect title is still going to be an issue with us. But a lot of people that are full-time investors at some point have made decisions, business decisions, not to do a deal for one reason or another. A lot of times people can have a low credit score just because if they own a lot of rentals, they have a lot of rental loans.
Right.
And then that makes them unlendable.
Right. Well, what's interesting about that, and when we spoke in front of Fannie Mae just a couple months ago, it dawned on me that, okay, you probably won't make many loans to our clientele because we always have vacant houses. That you're going to say, so if I have five vacant houses, which is not a lot for somebody in this full-time business, if I have five hard money loan payments with no rental offset, it'll make me not qualify under a standard term for anything.
Right.
But that's the business model.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's from the investor side also, which is kind of funny, we'll have clients, if they invest in short-term loans, kind of like what you're saying, Say somebody has $1 million in trust deeds paying 9%.
Right.
Okay. If they're in short-term loans and they go to qualify, the bank looks at that like they have $0. They don't
not only zero income, $0.
Yeah, that's what I mean. They don't have the money in their account,
and they don't have
don't have income.
Exactly.
So that's kind of a bank. That I think that sums up the bank, you know, in a nutshell. Because I don't know how you can look at it and say there's nothing there.
Yeah, that's completely ridiculous.
Yeah. So that never fails to amaze me.
The other thing that would differentiate a hard money lender from a standard lender would be we would look at the home that's in disrepair differently.
Yeah, absolutely. We're in most cases we do some rentals and we do obviously buy and flip type of loans, but we're looking at the property more as it will be, not as it currently sits.
Right.
And you know, most problems are solvable. So the bank is going to want everything in place, where with us, we're aware that there's going to be a lot of issues and work that's going to be need to be done.
The people that decide to go directly and borrow money, what's interesting about that, first of all, it's not easy to get trusted. That's a process that I've watched over the years listening to you. And I remember, and I don't mind saying it, you know, I met with somebody one time that already had a check in his possession to give to me for a trust deed purchase, and we went to lunch, and something I said during the lunch, and it was asking him for one more of those checks on another deal, he went home with that check.
Right.
And that it just taught me a lesson. It's like, wow, this is tenuous, man. One wrong thing, you could be.
Yeah. Well, it's a challenge, and I think that's the most fun I have really in the entire business, is starting out with somebody with one trust deed and seeing 5 years, you know, where it may end up.
Okay.
And I think the one thing with that is you're really, we've talked about this before, you always want to try to know that you're not setting somebody up for a no answer.
Right.
Like, you know, you using yours as an example, with that exact example where he was yes on one.
Right.
So you knew one was yes.
Right.
So when you said two, well, two could have been yes, or it could have been no.
Right. It was two no's. And I didn't know that was coming.
Right. But it's once you get a no, it changes. It can change everything. And we may have used this example before also, but when the Norris Group first started, a lot of the investors with the company where I was at chose to follow myself and the Norris Group. And one of my investors that had probably funded 20 of your loans at the previous company, now I presented him a loan of yours at the Norris Group, and he looked at that like it was totally foreign.
Wow.
So you really have to know how they're going to, you really try to know how they're going to react, because you really don't want to get in a situation where you feel like they've asked you something that you don't have an answer for, or certainly a good answer. But the one thing I will say this, if they do ask you a question that you don't have the answer for, don't give them an answer.
Right.
Tell them you'll find the answer.
You don't know.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, over the years, the programs have changed and morphed to whatever the industry, you know, is up to and what the people are finding. So what are the programs that we have right now for people that borrow money?
Yeah, we have the standard program, if you want to call it that, which everybody's had for years and years, where you go off the ARV, which is where you're going 65 to 70% of the after repaired value, holding for repairs. So that one has been around really forever, and everybody has that. The two relatively newer programs that we have is we have one program for rentals, and that has been hugely successful on both sides, meaning borrowers and investor. It's a 3-year loan, interest only at 6.9%. And realistically, if you can't get a bank loan, you will not get a cheaper rate than 6.9%, because no other hard money company, and I'll say this to my knowledge, has come close to doing that interest rate. And one reason we're able to do it is because we use individual investors on individual trust deeds, and we can offer a greater percentage of that 6.9% than say something that was pooled or something else.
Right, so, where they have a line of credit with the cost.
Yeah, type of thing. Exactly. So in a climate where it was necessary, that has been just a fantastic program for us. We do an awful lot of refis with that program. Mm-hmm. We do some purchases. So that program has been really successful for us. And then we also do a flip program now where we go off the purchase price. They put 25% down. We don't hold any money for repairs, and we do that at 8.9%. And that one is becoming more and more popular as it's been introduced. That's probably been maybe close to a year now that that's been out, and it's probably the most popular program of all three. And both the programs are a couple points, and the flip programs are 1 year interest only with no prepay. So that means you can pay them off at any time. There are exceptions. If you go over the 1 year, we'll extend it as long as taxes, insurance, and payments are current. And then the 3 year loan, it does have a 1 year prepay in it, just because people that are, you know, taking the lower rate, they want the consistent yield.
What would be an example of a product type that, you know, you hear, you get called all day long. So
right.
it's not what we lend on. So what are the product types we just kind of go, that's really not in our bailiwick?
Yeah. I mean, you're probably conforming is the word I use the most.
Okay.
So, a 1960 house on, an acre and a half in Hesperia, that might be conforming.
Right.
But a 1960s house in Corona on an acre and a half in a large area of new homes or something.
Or next to the freeway.
Yeah, yeah. So something like that, usually like large, anything over maybe 5 acres or something gets to be in a situation where you're probably not going to do it. We don't do commercial.
Or dirt.
We don't do any land. If something has a structural issue, we won't do it.
Now, that's kind of what I was leading to, because I'll speak in front of an audience and someone will come up to me and they're all excited. They got their right. first deal. They got a 25 grand deposit. And he's so you're a hard money lender. Yeah. And so he tells me, okay, well, it's on a hillside.
Yeah.
And it has, you know, I said, how many of these have you done?
Right.
So I want to know if this is his niche, right?
Yeah, it's his first.
This
probably.
Is his
yeah,
first
it
one.
It always is.
And I was like, can you get your 25 grand back? Because that's not how you start your career.
Right.
So, you know, that's one of the things that you get a lot of stuff run by, the foundation issues or fire burnouts or whatever.
Right.
And I think your first question is this a niche you own?
Yeah, like if the guy's a contractor and has experience in that, then it might be a good niche for him to continue to pursue.
Right.
But the one thing I tell most people when they have a situation like that is they really didn't find the deal. The deal found them.
That's
because
really true.
I mean, we know how competitive this business is. Okay. And I'll ask questions like, well, how long has it been on the market? Well, you know, 120 days.
Right.
So every buyer in the area has passed on it,
but you
got it.
Right.
So you didn't get it. In other words, it attached to you, and you really can make a mistake by you do your first deal and it's not a good deal. Your career really is over.
Yeah. You don't think good, well of the business at all.
Right.
That's
right.
For sure.
Right.
And what's interesting too is another phenomenon is the flipping to where you end up with, okay, you'll get a call and he's like third in line. Somebody found it and flipped it.
Right.
And you're going to fund it and it's going to build in all these profits for everybody else. And that's just, wow. And that's an example of that property found you.
Yeah, exactly. And unfortunately, I think another thing that'll happen that's quite common is we'll look at a deal and their estimation of value is higher than maybe what we think it is.
Right.
So one of the first questions I ask is, well, what did you base that on?
Right.
And a lot of times it's based on an agent. Sometimes it's even the listing agent.
Right.
Well, you need to know that yourself. I tell everybody's making a commission except for you. And it's all your money.
Right.
So you need to make sure that you're doing what's best for you.
Yeah, you need to learn to protect yourself. Craig, we're out of time for this segment. I'm talking about borrowing money. If you want to talk to Craig about hard money, it's at 951-780-5856. And Craig, thanks for joining
Thank
us.
Thank you.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.